Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Mason Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Lajos and Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Life is better now that the Mets aren't playing, which is a depressing sentence.
Yeah, less things to get upset about, I guess. All right, so this week we're going to start things off with an email. And as noted, it could also double as promote, extend, trade. So, Matt from Maryland wrote, quote, Lucas has mentioned a few times he likes the idea of trading Ronnie Mauricio.
I mean, I'm nothing if not a broken record on this show about several topics.
It is true. So, would his preferred return bring back a similarly ranked prospect, B, a multitude of lesser heralded prospects that could add depth to the system, or C, a big league piece that could slot into the 26-man roster? I guess this question also works with promote, extend, trade. Tell Ringo I say hi. So A, thank you, Matt. B, we will tell Ringo. And C, which outcome would you guys prefer? Lucas, since this is your question, you can go first, I guess.
Okay. I mean, I'll start by saying, and I think we're all aware of this, but as we're saying up front, like the premises are a little arbitrary, right? Like it really depends what you're getting in each of these frameworks, but let's work with it. If there was an equivalent prospect for prospect trade, at least based on public rankings, I would do it, but I don't think, like, I can't remember the last time there was a notable one of those.
I was thinking about the last time I could think, and I don't know if this is the last, was Jesus Montero and Michael Pineda.
That's like the example I had in my head, too.
Yeah. That might be the last big one.
I just didn't see the point.
I mean, if you could, if let's say I should have prepped for this, you know, BP top 50 midseason. Okay, if I pull up Baseball Prospectus' top 50 prospects from the midseason list, 40 is Ronnie Mauricio. Okay, so 39 was Kybert Reese, 41 is Shea Langeliers, 42 is Daniel Espino, 43 is DL Hall.
I like Espino.
45 is Dylan Dingler, right? So if you called up one of these teams, if I went and called up the Indians and said, hey, you seem to have a pretty full rotation, and you also seem to have a thing for our former shortstops, so do you want another one? Like, I would do that, but that kind of stuff just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Teams pretty much just stick with what they have prospect-wise.
Which I think is stupid, like, they should be more willing to do this, but it just doesn't happen.
I mean, but who do they have the most information on and the least information on?
Right, exactly.
They have the most information on their own guys and maybe not the least information, but less information about other guys. So I get why it's not more common.
Yeah, I think you run into like a catch-22 of the other team saying, well, what do you know that we don't? Why are you trading this guy, right? Like, it just becomes...
Yeah, because if you're doing it for a major league player, like, it's right. For salary reasons or rebuilding reasons or whatever, but if it's just a straight prospect-for-prospect swap, I'd be a little skeptical of you coming in and being like, hey, you know, like, I think this prospect is the same as this one, but it's a need. I feel like it's trust issues with that.
I mean, we've all played fantasy sports. Someone comes calling, offering you a deal that looks real good. You're thinking,
why?
Yeah, that I don't.
I legitimately never accept trades for.
No, you're that person.
That actually,
that guy again.
No.
So that's not going to happen probably. And I also don't think. I'd also say, how to phrase this? If I had faith in the Mets to evaluate well, which I don't, I'd be interested in taking a bunch of prospects from Horatio, because I don't think he's very good, and I think if you could evaluate well and you hit on 1.5 of the guys, you'd get back more value than Horatio. But I don't have any faith in them to do that. And they're also in a spot where they should probably be trying to win, and they need Major League help. Which is, so all this is a long-winded way of saying the best option here is trade him for a major leaguer, like, I don't know, Frankie Montas, maybe if the A's blow things up a little bit, something in that vein. And failing that, trade him for an equivalent prospect, and failing that, trade him for a bunch of prospects.
Agreed. That's what I was leaning towards.
Yeah, I really, if you're going to trade a prospect, just get a guy from the, like, the whole point of this is to make your major league team better, no matter what, right? Like, even if we're doing a minor league podcast every week deep into the off season and in, like, December and January and stuff, I still want to see the actual Mets, like, the major league Mets win, you know? As much as I want to see Syracuse and Binghamton and Brooklyn and all them, like, the Mets winning a World Series is the point, right? So, if trading Mauricio gets you closer to that, through a major leaguer, that's my main goal. And if somehow they get a prospect who's a little better and a team thinks Mauricio's a little better, then sure. But I still think, like, you're trading him because you're trying to win a World Series, like, next year.
I also think it's possible you could trade for a guy. I'm just using Montas because that's the name that I like the most, but that you could come up with any number of names here. You could trade for that guy. And if and when things aren't going well at the deadline or something, get relatively similar value back by trading him then, because prices typically go up at the deadline, and there's a desperate contender who needs a starter right now. And also, back to the core idea of I'm not a Mauricio fan, like, probably get a prospect with a not totally dissimilar tool set or public side ranking. Yeah, trade him for someone with a little bit of control at the major league side who could help there.
I mean, and this is a different conversation now, but I even think that more bad teams, like, should sign some veterans for
yes.
1 year with the sole purpose of trading them in a few months. Like, sure, maybe the player doesn't want to do that, but also some players might just want a major league job and will take that anyway. Like, why don't the Orioles sign, like, 2 or 3 solid veterans and then just with the idea of getting a prospect? Even if they're a marginal one, it's still one more prospect than you had before.
This is, and, I mean, I think this is the argument for a cap floor system or cap progressive tax system, hard cap like the NBA has, because you'll get bad teams who will overplay mediocre players and then, I mean, we don't need to get into the details of how the NBA salary cap works, right? But they'll, in effect, pay down their contract and trade them for assets. Like,
yeah.
if rebuilding teams actually were rebuilding and not just being cheap, they would be spending, like, hey, once again, I didn't prepare for this, MLB trade rumors, 21 to 22 free agents.
To fill time a little bit, this also happens in hockey, where teams need to hit the cap floor. And they'll trade for a guy who's going to be on long-term IR, and they will just trade him, and it'll affect the cap. Like, it'll have them reach the floor, and then they'll put him on IR with the intention that he never plays for them. So, like, and you get prospects for that, and you get picks for that, because you're helping another team with their cap situation. So, like, I think baseball teams need to be more creative in that sense, and they just aren't. Like, the Orioles just go out and, like, we're going to lose 110 games. Like, that's boring. Like, you know? Like, you could do that, and also you could trade
mm-hmm.
someone at the deadline for an extra prospect. And maybe you lose 107 instead, and you still end up with a top whatever pick, you know? Like, the level of veteran you're signing is not going to make your bad team good. It's just going to make you get an extra prospect at the deadline.
The name I'm going to pull out here is, like, Nelson Cruz. Go to Nelson Cruz agent and say, hey, you're on the back end of your career. No one's going to give you more than 1 year, and they're not going to give you a ton of money. Plus, there's a chance the team you sign with is shit by the midseason. Sign with our bad team. We'll give you 50% more than your best offer for 1 year, and you're basically guaranteed that we're going to trade you to a contender at the deadline.
You can even let them help choose. Like, yeah. Who cares at that point? Like, it's a free prospect. You know what I mean? Like, work with him.
But no, they just want to save money.
Yeah, that's spending money that they don't want to spend, so... Which is a problem we've talked about almost every week now, because it's a problem with the game that's maybe the biggest problem in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
We wandered from that initial promote extends trade. Anyway.
What's new? I think we all basically agree you want to get, you know, a major league piece, most importantly, and then barring that, a prospect who is just as good and least attractive would be a hodgepodge of players, hoping one of them maybe pops and becomes as good and or perceived as good as Mauricio. Mm.
I do want to see the fan reaction of a prospect for prospect swap straight up, because I feel like no one would know how to evaluate it.
Yeah,
like it's usually just like question mark or shrug emoji.
Yeah, I'd be like, okay.
It's just like, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Why? I think something like that is probably easiest to criticize, because kind of meaningless in this context, rankings are all over the place. If you trade your number three guy for a guy who's ranked number five but isn't actually a better player because another system is better, you're going to get that reaction. Oh, my God, you're trading three for a five? You downgraded.
And that's the problem with team-specific lists, and I think they're bad for that reason, because...
Some problem with ordinal lists generally.
Yeah, of course. But, like, the team-specific lists are my least favorite, because it just lacks any context at all.
Yep. Let's say you wind up with Carlos Cortez, number 10 prospect.
I mean, because he might be, but also, it also, like... That sucks. but it's like, if you're not plugged in like that, it just looks like number 10 prospect is good. And I don't blame, because before I was super plugged in, I would do the same thing, because how else would I know, you know?
Exactly.
It's not the fans' fault.
Nope. Before we move on, while I was just kind of looking stuff up related to this question, I found an interesting article that Ben Lindbergh wrote about 10 years ago, so it might be a little dated at this point. But he wrote something on DP that prospects that were developed by one team and then traded to another team, this is kind of interesting, are three times less likely to develop into average players or better, which he defined as three war or greater per season over the course of, you know, a couple of years. Part of that, I guess, is statistical noise probably, because the elite guys are traded less often. But it's kind of interesting.
I'd be interested. I'm not familiar with this study. I could think of several confounding factors, such as you're trading them to a worse team that is probably by definition worse at development. I had another one in mind and it has left my brain. So.
Yeah, but well, that's exactly, you know, that's the core of the issue, is that, you know, you could have a player that you drafted and started developing, and they are following, you know, ABC kind of developmental path, and they do these things that the Mets say do, and then you trade this player to another team, and all of a sudden they're doing, you know, XYZ things, and they're put on a separate developmental track, and all of a sudden, you know, they have to do things that this other team does. The most obvious thing that I could remember was a lot of the trades between like the Mets and the Pirates over the last 5 years or whatever it's been. What the hell is his name? Blake Taylor?
Yeah.
Mets had him. He was like a top prospect kind of, or first round pick or whatever it was in Pittsburgh, and they had him do like throw curveballs because they like curveballs there. And then he came to the Mets and they're like, oh no, don't throw your curveball. We like sliders. Throw sliders. You know, like that kind of stuff will impact the player.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And coaching staffs and things like that. You know, the Mets are good at developing pitchers, and then you go to another team like, oh yeah, no, we suck. You know? There's a million, you know, factors as to why that may be.
And there's also factors that we won't ever really know sitting here, you know? Like, there's stuff that happens in organizations that will never come out because they just keep it tight, and that's just how stuff works.
Speaking of the Pirates, there was that crazy Navy SEAL shit that they were doing. That probably had a negative impact on things.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. We're as shitty as the Mets are, at least we could always say, at least we're not the Pirates. All right, so we have a bit of news this week. So the first thing we can talk about is the Arizona Fall League, because the AFL rosters have been published. The Mets are going to be sending 8 players to the Salt River Rafters, not the Scottsdale Scorpions, who have been their AFL team since 2013. So opening day for the AFL is going to be the second Wednesday of October, which is the upcoming October 13th. And then it's going to conclude on Friday of the 6th week of the season, which this year is going to be November 19th. As we discussed a couple of weeks ago, the AFL, they're going to use all those experimental rules that Major League Baseball implemented this past year. So the 8 Mets that are going are, it is 4 pitchers and 4 position players. The pitchers are going to be right-handed pitcher Garrison Bryant, right-hander Connor Gray, right-hander Colin Holderman, and right-hander Brian Maguire. Position players that are going are third baseman Brett Beatty. I guess he's an outfielder now. Carlos Cortez. Catcher Hayden Senger. And infielder Wilmer Reyes. So we'll start with the position players. Brett Beatty, not going to really talk about him too much. Obviously, his inclusion makes sense. Excellent season in 50 games in Brooklyn. Had a slightly not as good but still great season with Binghamton. 40 games. He hit .292, .382, .473 with 12 homers and basically a 2-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio for the year. He's a top prospect getting a little seasoning in the AFL. Boom. That's what it's there for, you know?
Don't get hurt. That's it.
That's basically
I don't really care what else happens. He'll be fine. Don't get hurt.
Have fun hitting rockets to the moon.
Yeah, especially there.
off a bunch of pitchers who are just completely gassed.
Completely hosed, yeah.
He's going to hit something stupid. It's going to be hysterical.
Speaking of, that's a real depressing slate of pitchers.
Well, yeah. Well, we'll get to them in a minute. Carlos Cortez, kind of divisive guy. Started the season off of Binghamton super hot. Then he pulled off as the year went on, and he ended up hitting .257, .332, .487 in about 80 games with 14 homers and about a 2-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. It's kind of weird to me, being someone that's pretty lukewarm on him, to send him to the AFL. But then again, it's really not like there's too many other guys in the system that are better than, you know, number 10 prospect Carlos Cortez.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's whatever.
Yeah, it's whatever. Like, for everything we, all the Carlos Cortez chat we've had over the years, he's probably going to be a big leaguer, so.
Yeah,
why not get him more reps? Steve, they paid $1 million for him.
Twice. They tried.
It's true.
Well, someone that probably is going to be a big leaguer is Hayden Senger. We've talked about him in the past a bit and how his prospect stock has risen this year. This is his 24-year-old season. He played in 61 games at Brooklyn and Binghamton. Most of them were in Binghamton. And he hit .263, .341, .429. The peripherals weren't great. He did have a 4-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio. and that isn't good for a guy that doesn't really have too much power. But he's really a defense-first catcher, and any offense that you get from him is, you know, icing on the cake. So it is what it is. And if he can learn to hit a little better in the AFL, super.
He's going to be that classic backup catcher.
Yep.
He plays good defense, hits like 200, but runs a 200 ISO or something with no walks.
Major Henry Blanco vibes.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to replace Nito when Nito's too expensive.
Yeah,
like that's basically
defense
it.
Might not matter in 5 years for catchers, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, who knows?
We'll deal with that when we get there.
Yep. And then the last position player is Wilmer Reyes. He came back towards the end of the season. He was out because of a torn knee ligament, and he ended up playing 16 games with St. Lucie and Brooklyn. He went 20 for 68 in total with a pair of doubles, a pair of homers, six walks, and 10 strikeouts.
I think this is what I'd use it for, guys who didn't play a lot because of injury.
Yeah, just absolutely.
Now he gets to play a little more than he would have previously. Like, mm-hmm. You kind of recoup some of his season. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, 68 at-bats total,
yeah,
16 games, it's not a lot. And I wouldn't call him necessarily a prospect, but I did like what I saw from him in 2019. He's a pretty nice swing, I think. You know, he might be a guy that could develop a solid hit tool. So we'll see in the AFL, I guess, get some more at-bats. Weird thing with him, though, is he's basically played first base this year, and he's definitely not a first baseman. But that could just be a result of, you know, a knee injury, and they're just like, hey, just hang out at first base, don't do anything crazy.
Which I'm fine with minors. Who cares?
He definitely is a second baseman. He's not good enough at the arm for shortstop or third. His bat is not traditional first base bat, so he's a second baseman.
And I mean, maybe he's a utility guy later, and him having some first base experience helps.
Yeah, it can't hurt. So now the pitchers, motley group. First up, we have Garrison Bryant. He's another guy, spent most of the year in the DL. He ended up pitching 18.2 innings. So, yeah, definitely a guy that you want to get some more work.
Agreed.
Here's the real curveball in this group, Connor Gray. Now, Connor Gray, when I was just like, oh, yeah, Connor Gray. And I thought about it a second, like, wait a minute, Connor Gray? Who the hell is Connor Gray? And I'm someone that's been following, you know, as we all have been, this season, the system in depth. I completely forgot about Connor Gray. He was a free agent that the Mets signed back in June, towards the end of June, out of independent ball, excuse me. They signed him from the Chicago Dogs, from the Independent American Association. He was originally drafted by Arizona out of St. Bonaventure University in 2016, a 20th round pick. And he spent the next couple of years in their system slowly moving up and posting so-so results before getting released last May when Major League Baseball canceled the season. And then all of the teams made those massive roster cuts to prep for this new format with, you know, fewer teams. Over the offseason, he, you know, worked out at a kind of like drive line kind of place, and he bumped his fastball velocity up from the low 90s to the mid 90s, so that helps. He posted a even 4 ERA this year in 54 innings with Brooklyn and Binghamton, a solid 2.7 walks per nine, and an above average 10.3 strikeouts per nine. But I'm not really sure what to make of this dude, because the stuff doesn't really stand out. You know, it's an okay fastball, mid-90s, like I said, then the generic curveball, slider, changeup. The numbers were okay, but he's 27, turning 28 next year. It's just not really the kind
of guy. I didn't realize he's that old.
Yeah, like, not really the guy you see and typically see in AFL.
I mean, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, oh, shrug emoji, like, oh.
Hopefully he's fine. Like, hopefully he this is just him getting more reps and stuff, and he ends up, like, popping late, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to it's interesting to wonder if the Mets know something that is not really, that you can't really get from the stats or from, you know, seeing a game or two here or there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll see.
Some of these decisions just come down to, like, what the roster needs, so.
Yeah.
That's true, too.
And it could also be.
Like, bad. I know the Mets often send backup catchers solely because the team needs a backup catcher.
Next guy up, Colin Holdeman. He was drafted back in 2016, but he doesn't really have much of a resume because he's just had all kinds of injuries over the years and then COVID last year and everything. He missed time again this year, but for the most part, he pitched as a reliever instead of a starter. They finally said, you know what, just pitch at the bullpen, and he got a boost there. And 24 innings, over 15 appearances, he posted a 3.38 ERA with 16 hits allowed, 8 walks, which comes out to a 3.0 walk per 9, and 27 strikeouts, which comes out to a 10.1 strikeouts per 9. Converting to relief, it helped him consistently reach the top of his velocity band more often. He used to be kind of like a 93, 94 guy. Now he was hitting 96, 97 a lot, which is obviously helpful. And it also lets him focus just on throwing his slider, which always has been a pitch that flashed above average. And now he can just be a fastball slider dude. And the Mets have obviously had plenty of success with guys like that.
I look forward to him being mediocre for the Mets for 3 years before being released, picked up by the Mariners, and immediately becoming an elite later.
Yeah, on. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Hooray!
And last but not least is Brian Maguire. He was drafted in the 40th round of the 2018 draft. He is living proof that solid players can come out of those back-end rounds that have since been eliminated. But in 36 innings this season, all in relief with Brooklyn and Binghamton, he posted a 2.25 ERA, allowing 16 hits, walking 19, which is a 4.8 walk per 9, and striking out 52, which is a even 13 strikeout per 9. He is very stereotypical, very basic relief pitcher, starting package. Fastball sits in the mid-90s. He has the ability he'll reach back a little bit more and touch 96, 97. He complements it with a really good slider and an okay change. Very similar to Colin Holdeman, and both had good results. So
it's just like the AFL is what it is. It's just extra reps.
Yeah.
Like, I do want to say I would caution against looking too deeply into whatever happens either way with anyone. Yeah.
Now, just, are there any guys that you wish had been given AFL assignments over the guys that we mentioned?
Not really. Like, it is what it is.
There are definitely more interesting arms in this vein, like maybe Eric Orsi or Adam Oehler, but they also pitched a lot more innings, so they may be a little gassed.
I remember because of how baseball is, you know? I'd rather not throw their arms out in the AFL in November or whatever it is.
Couple of more relievers that I think are more have possible better upsides or longer futures in the organization than, you know, Gray or a Holderman or Maguire. But I mean, it's kind of rearranging, you know, the chairs on the deck of the Titanic, really. I mean, Willie Taveras, I like him. He was pretty good being converted to a reliever this year after being a so-so starter, you know, last year. A couple of other relievers, Tommy Wilson, Josh Hedgeka, Bryce Montes de Oca, you know, guys that they don't have.
Montes de Oca would get hurt immediately.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, early in November?
Talk about guys who could use less playing time.
Yeah. Talk about guys who need, he needs to not see a baseball.
He needs to rest.
Don't look at a baseball until February. It's a catch-22 for me, for the pitchers. For the hitters, I don't really care. Like, Beatty, sure, go not get hit 400 in the AFL. I don't care. But, like, sure, they could get hurt, but also, like, it's just you're not going to, like, have a – unless you Michael Conforto yourself, you're not really going to get, like, that type of injury swinging or playing the field. Like, one of my worst fears is like a legit guy with a future goes to the AFL and has Tommy John surgery because of it. And then you're like, well, that was dumb, you know? Yeah. Like, of course, these guys are still working out in the offseason, but it's just different in a game environment and having to ramp up and play games and be in a bullpen and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's a catch 22 for me.
Right. By nature, you know, there's limited amount of pitches that any guy can throw that he has in his arm, and you want to use them for your own team in the best possible way, not for the AFL.
And like you said, there's more, I guess, talented or guys with higher futures, but do you really want to risk that for them? You know,
it's also a real stretch to say there's a lot of guys who are much better than these arms.
Yes,
in this
system. Agreed. For
news
sure.
Flash, Mets farm bad, or maybe not bad, but ludicrously top heavy.
And like, you're not sending like a healthy Matt Allen.
No,
you know?
I mean, next year you probably, maybe depends what time he gets back exactly, but you might send Allen next year if he's still working his way back from TJ. If Ginn had come back 2 months later, I'd send him to the AFL to throw some more. How many innings did Ginn get in this year?
Like about 70.
Might actually have sent him to throw a little bit more. Fangraphs, please.
it never works when you want it to. Fangraphs.
No, it's still better than BP most of the time, which is unfortunate because I'd rather use BP. But all right, he was over 90. So.
Oh wow, 90. Okay.
Yeah, he got up to. I can do math in my head. I almost have a PhD. 92. So
yeah, exactly. I think you could save his bullets for next season.
Exactly. I don't have a problem. Like, if you want to stop at just over 90, coming back, TJ, sure. If he only had 70, I'd send him. Same goes for Allen next year or the younger dude who also got Tommy John, Ventura, right? He got Tommy John this year, I think.
He had something. Maybe a shoulder. It was some arm, though. Like, some arm injury, I remember.
Unfortunately.
I can't remember specifically off the top of my head, but he definitely had some type of arm injury.
Well, yeah, should definitely be an exciting AFL season.
Sadie's going to hit like 450. It's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, and his slugging percentage is going to be laughably high.
Everything he gets in the air to left field is just going to carry for two miles out of
the
park.
He's going to have video game numbers. It's going to be great.
Here's hoping, knock on wood.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Peter Kafka here, host of Land of the Giants, the podcast that explores the biggest and most important tech companies of our time. This season, we're examining the giant that changed what a computer is and then changed what a phone is. It's about a company that made world-changing products and remade itself along the way. I'm talking, of course, about Apple. Apple's runaway success comes from iconic leadership and one revolutionary product, the iPhone. We'll look closely at the story behind it, how they're made, who makes them, and the ramifications of Apple's ever-growing power.
They're a multiple trillion-dollar company. Their size and their success creates responsibilities for them, and they're not behaving in a responsible manner.
When part of your brand is that you're good for the world, you are going to be held responsible.
Land of the Giants, the Apple Revolution, from Recode and the Vox Media Podcast Network. New episodes are out every Wednesday. This season, sponsored by Webflow. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Audible, and yes, Apple Podcasts.
All right, so obviously the season is over. The year is condensed because of coronavirus, so there was not a mid-season All-Star game, both at different leagues and levels this year. But MLB.com has been giving out postseason All-Star Awards, and there were quite a few Mets guys, so let's go over all that kind of stuff. We'll start with the AAA East, where Syracuse Mets play. I'll just read the whole thing. So, first base All-Star, you have Juan Yepes from the Memphis Redbirds. At second base, you have Jake Knoll from the Rochester Red Wings. At shortstop, Kevin Smith from the Buffalo Bisons. Third base, who's also the MVP of AAA East, Adolin Rodriguez.
From Toledo,
Toledo Marlins.
Talk about a name to remember there.
Remembering some prospects.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
That's your that guy segment for today, Adolin Rodriguez.
At catcher is Tomas Tellez from the St. Paul Saints. Three outfielders, Josh Lowe from the Durham Bulls, Vidal Bruhan from the Durham Bulls, and Khalil Lee from the Syracuse Mets. The DH is Ryan McBroom from the Omaha Storm Chasers. Then there's a right-handed starter, Jackson Kowar from Omaha Storm Chasers. Why can't I say that word? Storm Chasers.
Uh-huh.
Left-handed starter Matthew Liberatore is from the Memphis Redbirds.
Fucking hell. And how many Rays are there? No, wait, he's a Cardinal now, but former Ray. Yep.
And last but not least is Luke Barker, reliever, all-star from the Nashville Sounds. So Khalil Lee, Soul Mets,
he deserved it.
This guy here. Yeah, definitely deserves it.
And in the outfield, that's some great company. Bruhan's probably a top 20-ish prospect. I really like Lau more than most rankings have him, but he's a top 100 guy. Look, if you want the Mets to contend and are also penciling in Khalil Lee as an outfield starter, you're nuts. I still really like Lee, and I thought his AAA season was very impressive, given the power-speed defense-walk combination. Like, the strikeouts are concerning, but look, if he holds it below 35 to start his major league career, like, he has so many other skills that I think he'd be a useful contributor. You don't hand that guy a starting corner outfield spot on a contending team, but if someone lets him get hurt,
let him play, and maybe he takes it. You know, that's the idea. And like, if by some chance the Mets have like three crazy good outfielders and he's the fourth, then he can play defense. Like, I think his defense was major league ready last year, as we saw when he was striking out a million times. He was still like won at least the Braves game in Atlanta. Like, he made some crazy catches against Atlanta last year, and it's like his defense is for real. So
yeah, I think a lot of people might not realize how good Khalil Lee actually was, and they kind of have it in their heads, that pretty terrible stretch with the Mets. Basically, for the year, after a pretty poor start with the Mets and with Syracuse, he ended up hitting .274, .451, .500.
.451, .500 is nuts.
Yeah, with 14 homers, 8 stolen bases. Yeah, it's an 18.3 walk rate.
If you want to do like a post All-Star break thing, let me arbitrarily draw this at, I don't know, June 16th or something. Whoop, I messed that up already. Refresh. FanGraphs continues to confuse and beguile me. God damn it.
I mean, he was pretty consistent. Yeah.
274, 448, 513. Now, he's striking out more than 30% of the time, but that's a 60% better than league average hitter for most of the season. It's good.
I saw that he had a 402 BABIP, which is pretty worrisome because it's hard to maintain that. But in 2019, the last season that he played, AA Northwest Arkansas Naturals, which is the Royals team, he had a 374 BABIP. In 129 games. Certain guys can just run high BABIPs because they're athletic and speedy and, you know.
Hit the ball hard.
Yeah, hit the ball hard. And, you know, I'm not saying that we should expect him to run a BABIP next year between 374 and 402, but, you know, he has 2 years now in a row. It is possible. It is theoretically possible.
I mean, Tim Anderson does it.
Yeah.
That's not saying, like, you should be making your entire organization out of that, because it's hard to do. Like, people always are like, this is the year Tim Anderson finally doesn't do it, and then he does it because there's just something in his game. But Like, maybe Khalil Lee has that. We don't know. Like, he's 23 or whatever.
Yep, so definitely a good acquisition.
He's also, like, at a position of need. Like, I hate doing the position of need stuff, but also, like, the Mets just had no outfield prospects at all. And
I mean, even if the Mets did, he plays a good short. I mean, excuse me. He plays a good center field. That's a,
of course,
that's universal, you know? So even if it wasn't doubly needed with the Mets.
And, like, I think it was a smart way to, I mean, that was a prospect for prospect trade, right? Like, you just kind of, like, swooped in the last second.
For yeah, they traded Valdez and Winkowski, who they got for Mets for the league.
Like, they just kind of helped facilitate the Benintendi trade. But that,
yeah, that was
for the Mets purpose. For the Mets purposes, it was prospects for prospects because they valued an organizational need. And that's kind of what we were talking about before. Like, they saw that how just awful the outfield prospects were. And I think Zach Scott really liked him. I think that what the story was. I can't remember, but yeah, it was something. There was something, but yeah, it was just like, they kind of saw they swooped in on him and then he's a legit prospect now for them.
Then Zach Scott celebrated with a celebratory drink afterwards. All right, now moving on to Double A Northeast, which is where the Binghamton Rumble Ponies played. At first base, the All-Star was Mason Martin from the Altoona Curve. Second base was Oswaldo Cabrera from the Somerset Patriots. Shortstop was O'Neill Cruz from the Altoona Curve. Third base was Mark Vientos from the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. Catcher, Adley Rushman from the Bowie Bay Sox. Three outfielders.
Shocker that.
Yeah. Three outfielders, Riley Green from the Erie Seawolves, Michael Beltre from the Somerset Patriots, and Jake Mangum from the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. The DH was Josh Lester, who plays with the Erie Seawolves. Right-handed pitcher is Grayson Rodriguez from Bowie. Left-handed pitcher was Juan Hillman from the Akron Rubber Ducks. And then the reliever all-star was Brian Marconi, who played with the Reading Fightin' Phils. So, Vientos first, we mentioned, you know, Khalil Lee got off to a rough start, and then he went insane, and basically the same thing happened with Vientos.
In, like, more extreme form,
yeah,
too.
In May, so his first 21 games, Vientos hit 231, 279, 410, with three homers and a 5-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio. And then in the 63 games over his next 4 months, he hit 295, 374, 632 with 22 homers and basically halved his strikeout-to-walk ratio to about 2.5-1. He hit 25 homers, the only guy in the system, the Mets system, to do that, and the most home runs by a Mets third base prospect since the AAA MVP, Adelin Rodriguez, who hit 24 in 2012.
Talk about a team for Steve.
Yeah.
Adelin Rodriguez at first. Marv Vientos at third. Hell yeah.
I mean, you have some fucking awful defense on this infield.
Just horrible. I do want to say I was a Vientos big hater, and he was so good this year. Like, at some point I was just like, all right, I guess he's good now. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. He just hits home runs every day. Like,
at, like, various levels of competition, too.
Yeah, it's not even like he was – he got moved up and hit, right? Like, he was just good.
I remain skeptical.
Of course. Like, I'm not saying, like, he's a star now, but
– yeah, we all know what the deal is with him.
Listen,
but it's certainly interesting.
I'm in the conductor seat on this train, and there's room for you guys.
I might even be – I don't know that my opinion has changed all that much from preseason. As dumb as that may sound, like, Double A was pretty bad this year, in terms of pitching, but, oh, we'll see. Hey, I hope he proves me wrong.
Listen, the last time the Mets had a 21-year-old third base prospect who split the season between Double A and Triple A, it worked out pretty good, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
For kicks, because I looked it up, do you want to know what David Wright's numbers were that year?
I don't know, like 350, 400, 550?
Yeah, pretty much. He played 91 games, 60 of them with the B-Mets, and then 31 with the Norfolk Tides. He hit 341, 441, 605 with 18 homers. Wait. Here's where 18 homers, 22 stolen bases, 55 walks, and 60 strikeouts.
God, David Wright was
91
games. Nothing else, man.
Dude was so good.
Mm-hmm. And somehow, Baseball America ranked him the 21st best prospect. MLB.com ranked him the 29th best prospect.
That was wrong.
Baseball Prospectus, they knew what was up, and they ranked him 5th.
True. Of course, David Wright was ranked as the 5th best prospect. That's perfect.
Yep. Oh, that is perfect.
Number 1, Joe Mauer. Can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Number 2, Jeremy Reed, LOL.
Ooh, yikes.
Number 3, Andy Marte, LOL. Oof. And number 4, Prince Fielder. Can't really argue with that.
Yeah, he was real good.
Yeah. And also, Jake Mangum was an all-star.
Yes, Jake Mangum, all-star.
Hit more home runs this year than his entire last 8 seasons combined.
So, 2?
Basically, in his entire
9.
Nine.
I think it was his entire SEC career, right? He hit more home runs this year than...
Yeah, he came out of the gate strong. He cooled off a bit mid-year, and then he finished strong. And he hit a combined 285, 337, 454, with a career-high 9 homers with Binghamton and Brooklyn. 9 games in Brooklyn, and then 75 in Binghamton.
Good for him.
You know what, though? I think that, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a 285 hitter, but he, if you go and... I've mentioned this, did I mention this before? I don't know. Or it might have been a player of the week thing that I did, I wrote up. But if you look at his splits, there are actually some legitimate changes that he made that might make him more legit of a guy. Basically in college, you know, he was a slap happy gap hitter. But this year he pulled the ball a lot more. He pulled the ball about 15% more. He cut down on his ground ball rate. He increased his fly ball rate by about 10%. So more balls were put in the air, they were pulled, and the home runs went up. So I don't know if that changes the needle much, but, you know, it's nicer to see him hitting for a little bit of power than just kind of being a Luis Castillo, you know?
I mean, I don't think he'll ever start, but, like, if he's going to be your 4th outfielder or whatever, or 5th even, like...
Right, exactly.
He still has to do that.
His ultimate upside was always kind of like a 4th outfielder, defensive replacement kind of guy, but to see that profile with a more competent bat, that's nice to see.
Mm. Yeah, because even nowadays, like, your bench players hit home runs. Like, he's like a 1970s-ass player, but still.
All right, now we'll move on to the High A East, where the Brooklyn Cyclones played. First base All-Star was Blaine Crim from the Hickory Crawdads. Second base was Nick Gonzalez from the Greensboro Grasshoppers. Shortstop was Ronnie Mauricio from the Brooklyn Cyclones. Third base was Jared Triolo from the Greensboro Grasshoppers. Catcher was Francisco Alvarez from the Brooklyn Cyclones. The 3 outfielders were Matt Frazier from the Greensboro Grasshoppers, Jordan Kisar from the Bowling Green Hot Rods, and Tyler Dearden from the Greensville Grasshoppers. At shortstop was Jalen Ortiz from the Jersey Shore Blue Claws. The starting right-handed pitcher was Quinn Priester from the Grasshoppers.
Lots of Pirates, man.
Yeah, a lot of Pirates. Jeez.
Left-handed pitcher was Jacob Lopez from the Bowling Green Hot Rods. And the reliever all-star was Blake Brown from the Jersey Shore Blue Claws. Alvarez, we can talk about him first because it's really hard to find anything bad to say.
Yeah.
Start of the year, St. Lucie, got promoted to Brooklyn after about 2 weeks or so and hit a combined 272, 388, 554 in 99 games with 24 homers, 55 walks, 89 strikeouts. He would have been one of the youngest players in the Low A Southeast if he stayed with St. Lucie for all the season. He was the youngest player in the High A East, and he was a catcher to boot. and he still ended the year fourth in OPS among players that played 80 or more games. And if you want to expand a little bit, he ended the year 12th in OPS among players that played in 50 or more games.
I feel like Ken deserves a victory lap on this one. Yeah, I mean, he tried to tell us.
Yeah. Yep, this is what they look
we
like,
were
guys.
All witnesses.
Yep.
Yep.
He called that a mile away.
Adley Rutschman should be at the major league level, and Francisco Alvarez should be the top catching prospect in baseball.
Goddamn Orioles.
They're not bringing him up, right? And it's going to be annoying.
Yeah, he's definitely.
He's going to spend all of next year.
Service time. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's what I expect. What Ken said, that he doesn't play at all in the majors next year.
Really? No, I don't think they can get away with that.
Well,
they're going to Chris Bryant him.
They're gonna say some wild stuff and be like, he's got to work on his base running and just.
Well, someone that does need to work on a couple of things is Ronnie Mauricio.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was a little surprised that he won All-Star honors, and I do think that it was kind of more of his name because the numbers were kind of underwhelming. And
wasn't
some of what we
Leo over Pugero in the same league. I don't understand how you give this to Mauricio over Pugero. I think they're in the same league. If I'm wrong on that, well, whatever.
Yeah, but he hit Mauricio 242, 290, 449, which is, like I said, it's a bit underwhelming. The good, because we'll talk about the good, he did hit 20 home runs, 19 with the Cyclones and one with Binghamton. And, you know, Maimonides Park can be a tough hitting park. But the bad, he did strike out 122 times to 26 walks, so that's a 5-1 ratio, which is not good. And the defense did not always look good. But he was 20. We'll cut him a little bit of slack. He was 20. That is 3 years younger than league average, which makes what Alvarez did even more impressive, because Alvarez is younger. But yeah, it's just Alvarez is a case of the best case scenario, and Mauricio, I wouldn't say it's like worst case scenario, but it just, you know, they tried.
I don't think it's worst case scenario with him, but it's just like the more I think about him, the less I understand what his ceiling is. Like,
I mean, the ceiling's huge. Like, we had.
I mean, the player right now that he is. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I still think there's a huge range because, like, Jeff went to a game and he made 4 8 level shortstop plays in the same game.
I mean, when I saw him live once this year, and he was great at shortstop.
Like, yeah,
he made multiple good plays, and I was like, oh, okay.
The ceiling is Javier Baez, a guy that can make good shortstop plays and will hit bombs, but he doesn't walk, he doesn't hit for average, he just hits bombs and does good strikeout, shortstop things.
Yeah, but Mauricio doesn't have
he doesn't have the bat-to-ball skills for that.
No. That's something that...
But I mean, who does? If Javier Baez takes walks, he's one of the...
He also doesn't have the power to do that.
Yeah.
You don't think that Mauricio has the power?
I think he does not have Javier Baez's power.
I don't know.
Javier Baez might have, like, 8 power.
Javier Baez has 8 power. 8 raw. 100%. Like, if Javier Baez doesn't have 8 raw, I don't know who does. Does he have 8 game power? No, probably not. Because he swings at everything.
Well, I mean, the only player with 8 game power is Jake Magnum.
I don't know that we've seen, like... I don't know that Mauricio has, like, he probably has 6 raw power. 7
I think power. I think he has 8 raw. I mean,
I don't think he has 8 raw. And he also can't hit, so it doesn't matter.
Right, right. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if you're not hitting enough. But
he needs to make a massive. His biggest problem is a total inability. It's one of two things, right? He either cannot recognize spin, in which case he's fucked, or he has no coherent approach,
yes,
in which case he's also fucked.
That is what I think.
He's only 20.
Right. Like, I mean, okay.
I don't think these guys don't usually figure it out, though. Like learning how to hit is hard. I feel like we really overvalue – I mean, I'm going on my usual rant here. We overvalue these heavy tools-based guys and just look at them and say – Man, imagine if he can hit, and then most of them never hit. So what are we doing?
Yeah, but the ones that do hit,
Sure, you're not wrong, but like,
I feel like it's chasing upside.
I feel like if they're gonna hit, they're gonna hit earlier than this. And yeah, sure, we can chase upside, but we should also be realistic about what that means, right? I don't understand how this is a top 50 prospect, but I hope some other team thinks he's a top 50 prospect and they trade him for that.
I feel like Mauricio is a guy who has kind of lived off of his reputation, and as a result, he's never really been sat down and been, I don't know how to put it, like.
I don't think it's just reputation. I think it's literally being too good at, like, it's the, Ahmed had the same problem, I think. He got away with just being better at bat to ball than the pitchers were at throwing him stuff. Basically throughout the entire minor leagues, and he never had to learn how to lay off stuff or how to develop a coherent approach. And then the second he got to the majors, he couldn't lay off a slider low and away. And I see basically the same thing happening with Mauricio, and we're going to constantly like see a glimmer of him tomahawking a ball at his eyes out of the ballpark and be like, wow, that was incredible. And then look at his batting line. He's batting 240, 290.
Yeah, I mean, he's 20, turning 21 next year. There's still plenty of time, but definitely would like to see him take some steps next year.
Yes, I would like to see that too.
Now the final level, Low A Southeast, where St. Lucie plays. The first base all-star is PK Morris from the Dunedin Blue Jays. The second base all-star is Trevor Hauver from the Tampa Tarpons. Shortstop is Orvelas Martinez from the Dunedin Blue Jays. Third base is Jose Peroza from the St. Lucie Mets. Catcher is Andy Rodriguez from the Bradenton Marauders. The three outfielders are Victor Mesa Jr. from the Jupiter Hammerheads. Stuart Baroa from the Dunedin Blue Jays. And Alan Cerda from the Daytona Tortugas. The DH is Addison Barger from the Tortugas. The right-handed pitcher is Adrian Florencio from the Bradenton Marauders. The left-handed pitcher was Nasuel Polino from the Dunedin Blue Jays.
Okay, Blue Jays, relax.
Yeah. And the reliever all-star was Emmanuel Mejia from the Bradenton Marauders. So the only Mets guy here, Jose Peroza. He ended up hitting 253, 365, 421. With 12 homers, 54 walks, and 111 strikeouts in 102 games, split between St. Lucie and Brooklyn. Spent about two-thirds of the year St. Lucie and then a third of Brooklyn. And he posted a 136 WRC plus in St. Lucie, which is well above average, and then 82 in Brooklyn, which is not well below average, but not, you know, not, it's a bit above low average. He was 21, which is 2 years younger than the league average in the High East this year. And as an international prospect, you know, a lot of the times those guys develop slower with certain baseball skills compared to domestic guys with college experience. But all in all, you know, it was a good season for Peroza. It was an encouraging to see. He hit 12 homers, and he's a guy that's noted for having raw power. So it's good to see, you know, he's been able to tap into the raw power and translate it in game. You know, maybe that increases a little bit more some swing optimizations. Maybe the ability to put bat on ball increases with some optimizations there, you know. Definitely a guy that, you know, maybe a tweak or two and he puts himself really on the map.
Yeah, I agree. He's someone who could explode, like do stuff and then be a legit prospect.
I'd rather
rank him 10th than Carlos Cortez.
Yeah. I was gonna say I think that he will be on lists this year, but you know, a good season next year and he could go from like a guy on a list to a legit guy on in system, you know.
I think he has a good eye, which is a nice base for like obviously the OBP says that, but like when I saw him, he was like, they were just throwing him curveballs and he was just not swinging at them. like he looked bad on one, and then the game plan the rest of the game was just throw him stuff in the dirt and he just didn't swing at it. He was just like, okay. And he didn't even offer at it. It was, he knew they were coming and he laid off of them. And it was a really smart approach by him, knowing what was coming. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff was like, oh, okay, I see why he has an OBP like that, even after just the few FFs that I saw.
Yeah, I mean, I do like him, so.
Me too. I like him too.
Hopefully he pops. He really hasn't come up at any point in the season in any of our discussions, but there was a name there that should be familiar. Andy Rodriguez. The Lucchese trade.
He's been good.
He's been good.
He was like kind of ho-hum. Oh, that's interesting all year. And then he finished on fire.
Yep. End of the year hitting 294, 380, 512 with 15 homers. And is one of the Pirates' top 15 prospects in their system.
So from July onward, he hit 326, 411, 455 with a close to a 1-to-1 strike to walkout ratio and 9 homers in 218 at bats.
Not bad.
As a catcher.
As a catcher. As a catcher and then some, because he also played
the outfield.
First and the outfield, yeah.
The 21-year-old catcher in single A. Like,
not
that's
bad.
Things a little bit.
I didn't obviously have a problem with that trade, but this is what happens when you're bad at self-scouting.
Yeah, obviously you need more than just one season to evaluate these kind of things, because remember Geraldo Catalina and how we were all kicking ourselves?
He
kind of shit the bed. He's terrible. So, you know, Rodriguez could have a good year this year, and then next year he's just completely overmatched and looks lost.
Mm-hmm.
But at least the process here was okay. You know, it was a bad process with Catalina from start to end. At least the process here was with Lucchese, you know, it softens the blow if it works out completely in the Pirates' favor.
But also, sometimes when you're trying to win, this happens. Like, you need to trade for the controllable starter who's around and the young prospect who you give up pops, and then that's you kind of have to deal with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to lose trades, I'd rather lose them this way than trading, like, a big-time guy for someone and missing on it.
Right. At the end of the day, though, I mean, who needs Andy Rodriguez when you have Francisco Alvarez, right?
True.
Sure, that probably helps. Like,
although, with his whole 12 games, whatever, of his experience in the outfield, he would instantly be like one of the Mets' top outfield prospects. Whoops. But, yeah. So those are the Mets' 2021 All-Stars. Hopefully next season, everything starts on time in April, and they actually have, like, an All-Star game mid-year and everything.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
All right, well, let's wrap things up with the Wilpon Read of the Week. And not really sure who the Wilpon of the Week here is in this story. But basically, like, a couple days ago, Kristen Sinema, a senator from Arizona, she was confronted by a bunch of activists. And her response was literally to run away and hide in the bathroom. So I don't know. I don't know if she's the Wilpon of the Week, because at this point she just gives no fucks anymore that people see how, you know, fully corrupt she is and doesn't give a shit about anyone who isn't giving her money and literally runs and locks herself in the bathroom. That's pretty Wilpon-y. On the other hand, though, like, half of the editorials from media sources are basically poo-pooing what the activists did, because I guess the bathroom is like sacred ground. And
that's to me seems the more Wilpon-y element, right? Because the key to Wilpon-ery, in my opinion, is a inflated sense of self-confidence that you are in fact the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just blatant corruption or shittiness like cinema. It's no, I'm right, and all you people criticizing me are wrong. Fuck you. So I think it's much more the media narrative around it.
That does sound Wilpon-ian. Wilpon-y.
Like, Jeff wasn't intentionally bad at his job. He wanted the Mets to be good. He was just an idiot. And
yeah. Like, the Wilpons wanted a win. They just didn't know how.
And they weren't smart enough to go out and get people that did know how.
Also, they were too proud to do that. Yeah. I think they wanted to win and also wanted to be the reason. And also, they didn't know how to do it, so they lost all the time.
That's why Wilponery is a word. All right, well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complexbeans@gmail.com. And here comes the yawn that I always make when I'm doing this part. I've been, like, Pavlovianly hypnotized here. All right, you can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElvlaHost343. Ken is at KenLeffen91. And Thomas is at SedMedSeason, SZN. Subscribe to our podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, and rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening, especially Ringo. We will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.